This pod is brought to you from the top half of League One. Yes, that's right. In this week's Under the Abbey Stand, we look back at a perfect week, the points returned for the U's, even though the performances themselves were far from perfect. We're going to discuss crew, Donny, an injury to Iron Joe, the rise and fall of the Nibbler, the march to 50 points, and look ahead to a pizza quarterfinal and Fleetwood away. I'm your host. My name is Jordan Warland, or as I'm known on Twitter these days, as the guy who likes to complain about things in the South Habin. Sorry about that. It's been a big week for the U's, and I've got a big panel to dissect everything that's gone on. My first panelist is not here to talk about 6 points picked up this week. Instead, he's here to talk about 8 goals scored by Andy Dallas. Good evening, Owen.
Evening. How are you doing?
Very well, mate. You?
Yes, I'm very good. Yeah. We'll get on to Mr. Dallas later.
There's going to be plenty of transfer and striker talk in this pod. I can sense it, and I can't wait for you to pitch to us why we should bring Andy Dallas back.
Stats speak for themselves.
Talking of stats, Tom Walker, I'm gonna read something out loud, and I want you to tell me how great it sounds. 5 wins on the trot.
What are we worried about? Perfect. Good week. And I'm not going to repeat it again, but clean sheets are quite good, aren't they?
Quick question for you, Tom, before we get going. Of course, there is going to be pizza trophy talk in this pod. Are you ready for that? And you ready for the backlash again?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And there's nothing better to do on a Tuesday night. Stick it on iFollow and just watch the abuse come in.
Bullish as ever. Right, let's look back then at a pretty successful week on the pitch for Cambridge. 2 games, 2 wins, 6 points in the bag. We're going to start, as always, with Tom Walker's hot takes on the whole week, both games, performances, points return. What's your take, mate?
Yeah, I suppose it's not a massive hot take to say it's been quite a pleasing, sort of 7 days. Obviously, we talked at length about the win at Lincoln last week, and I think after that, we sort of had the sense that with the games we had coming up at the Abbey, Doncaster, and then obviously Crewe on Saturday, there's a real opportunity to not only distance ourselves from the bottom four, but also maybe to knock a couple of those teams out of the sort of possibility of catching us. And I think we've done that. I think we've done it really well. So it's probably not a massive hot take to say that, you know, it's gone pretty well. I feel like it's probably... you know, we talked a lot at the end of sort of 2021 about that run of games that we went on where we played against, you know, without doubt the best teams in the league, the Wiggans, the Sunderlands, the Rotherhams. And in most of those games, I think probably barring MK Dons away, we competed very well. And, we didn't get what we felt we deserved from those games. And that was because, you know, we played quite well against good opposition and, you know, just whether it's a slight lack of quality or not quite getting the right decisions and that sort of thing. We came out of that run of games with a significantly lower points return than what our performance has merited. And, I think if you look at the games against Doncaster, against Crewe, you can probably say it's a bit of the opposite, to be honest. I thought particularly against Doncaster, we were quite poor at times, to be honest. And I'm sure we'll go on to talk about the game in detail, but the way that the first half went, you know, all the sort of chances that Doncaster had, and then basically to go in at half-time 1-0 up because one of their centre-backs slipped and we just sort of pounced on it in the stoppage half for the first time. Sometimes when luck's on your side, it's on your side, right? And the game against Crewe, I don't think it was as bad. At times, it wasn't a great spectacle, but I suppose if you're looking for a hot take or opinion from me, it's that type of game that keeps you up in this division. We're not going to earn survival when it's 25 degrees and lovely outside, and you know the pitches look brilliant, and you know it's sort of big occasions. It's those Tuesday nights against bottom of the league. It's the sort of grinding out 1-0 wins against Crewe, which does it. So. Really positive week. I think it's a results business, and obviously we've delivered this week and just continues what's been a pretty good year so far.
Yeah, you're absolutely spot on. It's not been that long since we were coming on here each week and saying, oh, we played really well, but we've had no points to show from it. And yeah, this week has been the complete opposite, and potentially you can bundle Lincoln in there as well, saying, you know, we've not played that well, but we've got 3 points off the back of it. Yeah, Donny definitely could have been 3-0 up at halftime. Didn't count for the sharpness of the nibbler, I'm guessing. And then, yeah, the crew game, I guess, was always going to be, how do you cope without Big Joe up top? But we'll touch on all those points further on in the pod. But Owen, I'm going to come to you first on the subject of how we played over the last two games, and how perhaps the scoreline and the performance didn't really tally up. And we've had a question come in from Richard. Thank you, everyone, for sending in your questions at AbbeyStanPod on Twitter. Richard got in touch and said, or asked, when did we last have such a resilient Cambridge team? The ability to win when playing badly, or grind out and hang on for draws or wins. We've had exciting attacking teams, but I think we have to go back to Beck for this level of team spirit. What's your thoughts on that one, Owen?
Good question. Yeah. And John Beck, a little bit before my time, John Beck's first reign. I mean, I'm sure we're not talking about the second reign there when it comes to resilience.
No resilience there, was there?
None at all. No. Do you know what? If we're going back to kind of 1994, 1995 kind of time, which is when I started going, I'm really struggling to think of a team that was like resilient, like this one is, but really fights. If you think of the good teams we've had in that period, and I'm writing off a huge part of United's history, but I can only talk about what I've seen personally. Rory McFarlane's team is a fantastic attacking team, but I wouldn't say it's particularly resilient. I mean, we should have wrapped that league up and didn't. The two kind of conference playoffs, failed conference playoff teams, mm-hmm. again, fell at the last hurdle. I guess, and I don't think this team is as resilient as the team we have now, but probably like the first half of the promotion season in the conference, we got down and ground out the results we needed then. Fell apart a little bit in the second half of the season, certainly towards the end of that season anyway. It was really, we really had some pretty bad results and were not necessarily in danger of kind of not getting in the playoffs, but certainly in danger of not getting to the playoff final. So, yeah, I mean, for me, this team is by far and away a super resilient team. And, you know, I think a lot of that is down to Mark Bonner and his way of managing the players and getting them fighting for him.
Yeah, spot on. I think the use of the word spirit in Richard's question there is a really interesting word, because, yeah, I don't think we've seen this level of sort of togetherness and morale in a Cambridge team for a long time. Like you say, even compared to teams that have been successful and won promotion or been attractive on the eye. So yeah, I guess there are parallels there between Bonner and Beck, in the sense that they have taken players and have got them to overachieve and are now getting them to punch above their weight in a level above perhaps what you would expect them to be playing at. And actually Bonner, in his pre-match presser ahead of the crew game, was talking about spirit and, you know, just how good it was here and how we should embrace it, because it doesn't last forever. It can change quite quickly. And I wonder, over maybe not the remainder of this transfer window, but future transfer windows, where we might see comings and goings, like what the impact might be on spirit. Just coming back to that Doncaster game then, could have easily been 3-0 down at halftime. Like Tom rightly points out, it was a slip by the defender that led us in to get the goal at the perfect time. On the topic of that and smash and grab wins in general, Russ asked us, what's the best smash and grab Cambridge win you've ever seen? Guys, I hope you're more positive than I am, because when I was thinking about this question, I could only think about smash and grabs done against us. So I've got a whole long list of really bad ones. I'm going to go back. Well, I didn't want to mention Scunthorpe at home last season. That's coming up to about a year. That was a horrible evening. But then I was going through my brain to remember if I could remember this one correctly. And I've looked it up. April 2009, the year that we lost to Torquay in the playoff final, where we were chasing down Burton at the top of the conference. And Roy McFarland, his second mention of the pod, he was doing his best at Burton to give us a hand. And we were so close to catching them, and it went down to the final day. But a game that sometimes is forgotten, but like, I think it was the second or third last home game of the season. We absolutely dominated Forest Green at home. So this is Forest Green before all the money. And they somehow won 1-0. And that result for me was why we didn't go up automatically. So that's a bit of a downer. So hopefully you two have got some more positive answers of smash and grabs that have gone in our favour. Who wants to start?
Go on. Yeah. I've got a couple, actually. A couple from last season. The obvious one was Walsall at home last season. Paul Mullin, 94th minute. Just, you know, absolute pandemonium. Not in the stands, obviously, because, you know, we wasn't watching at the Abbey due to lockdown. But that was a great smash and grab. I think we didn't play particularly well that game either, but just did what we needed to do, ground it out at the very last minute. And my other one comes away from home, because I think a real smash and grab should be away from home, shouldn't it? Was again another Paul Mullin goal, but Adam May again with a winner. I'm sure we'll talk about Adam May in a bit, but at Carlisle last season, it was probably the game that, or one of the games where things started to really go wrong for Carlisle. They had a huge number of games in hand over us and were, tons, they were quite close in points, weren't they? But still had like maybe four or five games in hand over us and some of the teams at the top. And we went there and got the 3 points. And I think that really was, again, one of the games for me when I kind of really started to believe that, yeah, we might just do this.
I think things started going wrong for Carlisle when they released one Jack Iredale. I remember their fans telling us that he wasn't good enough for a promotion League Two team. Who's laughing now? Hey, Tom, did Owen steal your answers, or have you got any more?
Yeah, a little bit. but I've got to be honest, I found it quite difficult to find one. But I think you look back to last season and there was several. Obviously, I already mentioned there the Carlisle game and the game at home to Walsall. I guess you'd look at, you know, Liam O'Neill's goal away at Port Vale as well in that. A game where, again, for long periods of time, we were pretty poor and at best there was not much in it between the two teams. And then, yeah, just sort of out of nowhere, this sort of long-range thunderbolt crashes into the top corner. I guess a classic smash and grab has to be a win, but if we're looking at just getting something out of a game you didn't really deserve anything from, then maybe again from last season, you can look at Cheltenham away. Where, you know, again, for long periods of that game, we were second best and just sort of, you know, Mullin popped up in the last minute as he did on a number of occasions and just earned us a point. But it was difficult, to be honest, to find them because, yeah, I guess a bit like you, Jordan, all I could really think of was the amount of times where you stood in the NRE or people who stood in the Habin or sat in the main stand and watched us pile on pressure and pile on pressure and pile on pressure. And then right at the end, some like part-time Timpot outfit like just nicks a winner like right at the end. So that was the main sort of memory for myself. But yeah, I guess if you look at last season, it's probably about seven or eight in our favour that were quite memorable.
I'm glad you guys have come up with some more positive answers than mine. Talking of positive things, there's a real collector's item on Tuesday night. Harrison Dunk's first goal in about 700,000 games. Bob has been in touch and asked, did anyone deserve that goal more than Dunk on Tuesday night? His contribution this year has been immense. He is such a club legend, been following the U's for 40 years. He's one of our best players. Guys, it's hard to disagree with Bob, isn't it? Owen, you're a big Dunk fan. Did anyone deserve that goal more than him on Tuesday?
No, absolutely not. I mean, I spoke about Harrison Dunk on the last pod, waxed lyrical about him as we often do. And it's just, yeah, I mean, there's just nothing more to say about the guy, really. He confounds people's, there's been times when he's been written off, isn't there, where people have thought, oh, he's not going to make the step up from the Conference to League Two. He's not going to make the step up from League Two to League One. And he does every single time and just proves people wrong. And he just seems to play better and better, whether he's at left back, whether he's at left wing. Like, yeah, I rate the guy. He seems to be a great guy off the pitch as well, which obviously helps. But as a player, you can't ask for anything more than what he's given United over 400 odd games. yeah, he's not scored many goals, but they've all been pretty memorable when he has scored, hasn't it? And May.
I wonder if his goal was it. Oh, was it Chesterfield away a couple of years ago? Would you count that as a smash and grab, Tom? That seemed like quite a late sort of turnaround in the game. Anyway, talking about sort of good performances on Tuesday night, another good one from our friend James Brophy. He got himself an assist at the end. Would you say he's having the best sort of spell at the club to date, Tom?
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, he's not been here for a huge amount of time and not played too many games for us, but I think we had a question about James Brophy maybe 4 or 5 weeks ago about what he sort of brings to the team and what his sort of value is. And I think we've seen it very, very clearly over the last, particularly over the last week. I think we've talked on a lot of occasions about in the more sort of difficult games, maybe the away games that sort of fancied opposition, his ability to firstly get us up the pitch is something that's so useful. It seems like whenever he picks the ball up, when he either loses it or gives it away or puts a cross in or something like that, it's at least 40 yards sort of further forward. And clearly, if you're trying to relieve pressure, that's obviously very good. But I think what's been more impressive in the last couple of games is just his ability to beat a man. I appreciate that the end product is not always there. But let's face it, if we had a winger who could beat his man and put in a pretty consistent end product, he simply wouldn't be playing for us. He'd be playing in the Championship or in the Premier League. I think he's really valuable, and he's clearly one of these players who's caught the attention of those who might like to kind of scapegoat players. And unfortunately, I do think that's going to be pretty difficult or impossible to remove. So we've just got to kind of accept that that's going to happen. Leave it to us to sort of lavish praise on him, because I think he's been really good. He's got his assist for the third goal on Tuesday night was brilliant. It was, what was it, sort of 93rd, 94th minute of a pretty agonising stoppage time. And when he got the ball, everyone around me was just like, get it in the corner, do not do anything with that football. and when he cut in, It's no exaggeration to say there was actual anger around me.
I was livid because it ruined my moose net of 2-1.
Yeah, well, that's justified. That's completely justified. Then he puts it on a plate with Smith and obviously seals the win. But against Crewe, obviously, similar sorts of things. Maybe not the sort of final product in terms of a goal or an assist. But I think what he brings to this team is really valuable. There's been a bit of conversation during the week about comparisons with Hannon and the fact that, Luke Hannon from last season, the fact that Bonner seems to like this sort of player on the left. And I think it's, particularly combining with Dunk, we're starting to see that sort of relationship forming quite well. So, certainly his best spell for us. But I'd also caveat by saying I don't think he's actually been particularly bad at any points. I think there's one particularly quite bad performance where MK Dons, but I think like we've said before, there's a lot of players who were there were a lot of players who were sort of out of sorts that day. And if you look earlier in the season, I guess the biggest criticism that you could realistically level at him is that he wasn't scoring enough goals or wasn't getting enough assists. But I think overall his performance has been pretty good the whole time. But I think now, he's really kind of stepped up a little bit.
There's a really good article, if I say so myself, up on undertheabbeystand.com that Julian wrote talking about Brophy's performance this season and just the idea of every team having a scapegoat in general. So head to that and read that if you haven't seen it. Just on Brophy, one last question, Tom. Liam asked a really good question a couple of weeks ago and we didn't get round to answering it. So he asked it again this week. So thank you, Liam. I've remembered now that I wanted to raise this one with Tom. Liam was intrigued by the idea of playing Brophy on the right-hand side so he could do that kind of Mahrez role, sort of cut inside. Do you think that would benefit his left foot and the way he plays, or do you think that would leave us a little bit lopsided, and protection of sort of the fullbacks and things like that?
Yeah, I think it would probably benefit James Brophy, but I'm not sure it would benefit the whole team and how we sort of operate as a unit. Clearly get more shooting opportunities and therefore you can shoot more goals. But I think his strengths in our team are when he can get us up the pitch, get to the byline and deliver a cross. And I don't think he'd be able to do that as effectively if he's cutting in all the time. But I think I've always kind of been of the opinion that wingers are just kind of wingers and they're kind of interchangeable if they play on the sort of like, you know, on the right or the left. A lot of the times you see it in, you know, within games, wingers will, you know, swap side. Partly it might be for that reason, to see what they can, you know, do on the, you know, perhaps either cutting in or sort of being able to get to, down to the byline. And part of that might just be to, you know, give the sort of opposition fullbacks a bit, you know, a bit more to think about. But I think it's one that will probably have been considered, but I think when you look at it, you know, in sort of wider context, I think we're probably a better team for Jamesborough if you're playing where he plays. And if you want evidence of that, then just look at the sort of results over the last sort of three or four games.
Yeah, I fear sort of moving him to the right hand side, whilst it would allow Williams to bomb on and attack quite nicely, I don't know how well it will sort of cover him sort of defensively, and that's one of the things that Brophy does well, actually. He gets back and does his defensive duties really well. Also, I don't know if we would be able to find someone to then go on the left hand side. I mean, I guess Lancaster's coming back, so you can maybe look at him or Wes. But on the topic of Williams, obviously Tuesday night saw the return to the Abbey for Kyle Noyle, playing centre-back, which he's done a couple of times for Donny recently because of injury problems. He almost scored, actually. I think it was one of his chances in the first half from a corner that clipped the outside of the post. This was a hot topic on our UTAS WhatsApp thread throughout the week. Who do you prefer in your team, Williams or Noyle? Owen, we're coming to you first.
It's really difficult. In the WhatsApp, I think I went with Noyle. And as much as I want to stand by that, Williams has been really, really impressive of late. He had a bit of a difficult start, didn't he, to his United career, Williams. I think he was a candidate for the club scapegoat role for a little while, but he's really cracked on, hasn't he? And he really gives you... He's really solid, I find. I think he's a really solid defender. I don't know if anyone saw yesterday, he did this incredible diving header to create, well, not really a chance, but to get the ball back up the pitch. He's certainly a lot more defensive focused than Noyle was. I think Noyle's still probably the better player going forward and will probably play at a higher level in his career.
It looks like he's going up to a lower level, mate.
Yeah, he's at the moment, but I suspect, I don't know, it's hard to say, isn't it? Maybe it's just one of those things. It was like last season was a perfect storm for Kyle Noyle, and like Paul Mullen, he just had the absolute season of his life under Mark Bonner, and he's not going to replicate it elsewhere. But last year, he was so dangerous, and he was such a big, big part of why we finished where we did and achieved what we did. So it's really hard to pick. It's really hard to pick. They're both fantastic players. I won't hear a bad word said against Noyle. And yeah, Noyle attacking, Williams defending.
Tom, I think I already know your answer.
Yeah, I think I summed it up pretty well there. But I don't think Kyle Noyle will get in our team at the moment, to be honest. If everyone's fit and available, I think Williams would be a first choice. I think, yeah, exactly as Owen says, Noyle's probably better going forward, but I think Williams is a more solid option at the back, and the experience that he brings as well is, I think, pretty valuable as well. I think for the situation we're in at the moment, you know, with what we're hoping to achieve, which is staying up, I think Williams is your man.
It's interesting because I don't think the stats for goal involvements, there's much difference between the two of them. Noyle obviously scored sensational goal last year. I think it was at home to Crawley and got himself a few assists. Williams has got more goals this season and has got a couple of assists as well. So I think statistically going forward, they're probably closer than we think, but perhaps Noyle is maybe more attractive on the eye. Seems like we're kind of sort of on the fence between them. So I get the casting vote and my decision is Ben Chenery. So that's that one settled. The big talking point from Tuesday night for me was seeing our beloved Joe Ironside go down injured, play on for a little bit, then hobble off. Then obviously the big talking point on Saturday was he doesn't make the match day squad at all. After the game, Bonner was saying that he's rolled his ankle and he's going to go see a specialist this week. I'm no physio, but that sounds like he's probably not going to play too many games over the next couple of weeks. Tom, how do you feel we coped on Saturday without Big Joe? How do you think medium-sized Smith did up top on his own? And can you teach Sam Smith the offside rule?
Yeah, I mean, let's start with that one first, because he was offside about 14 times, I think, on Saturday. Got a little bit infuriated to be honest.
Julian texted me, said it was like two or three. I was like, I swear it's about seven or eight.
No, I think it was about two or three in the first sort of 10 minutes, to be honest. Yeah, it was quite annoying. I mean, firstly, on Ironside, I mean, he's going to be a miss for any team. I feel like we all kind of felt it when he got that knock. I think all our ankles went a little bit there. Yeah, obviously, shame to see him go off. I think it was quite clear, you know, from the sort of initial injury before he played on, that it wasn't going to happen for the rest of the evening. So hopefully he's back sooner rather than later, because, you don't need me to sort of explain what an impact he has on the team and how good he's been for the last couple of years. But I think on how we coped, it's obviously going to be difficult. It felt like it took us a little while to sort of get to grips with the fact that Joe Ironside wasn't there, to be honest. On Smith, I thought he did actually a pretty reasonable job. Like, I don't think he's the sort of player who should be playing up front on his own. So it's obviously going to be difficult, but I think he sort of worked really hard and sort of, I think he won more headers than maybe people can maybe give him credit for, but it's obviously going to be difficult. I think the way that you want to play, if Smith's going to be a lone striker, is sort of quick driven balls, sort of just dropping between the centre back and the full back for him to sort of chase onto, rather than the sort of long ball aims at his head, basically, because I don't think he's going to have too much success against massive centre backs every week. But it's obviously tough, and it's obviously something that we're going to have to try and cope with it a little bit. But I would not be surprised in the next 7 or 8 days to see a little bit more support coming in.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about the transfer window then. I think we've got a week or so until it closes. I think we'll have another pod before it closes. So I look forward to next Monday's pod coming out and instantly being out of date, because we've signed a couple of players, as is the UTAS way. You're bang on, Tom. It was frustrating, wasn't it, sort of seeing us pump it long for Smith when he's not that kind of striker, and especially because we had such a great example for the third goal on Tuesday night of how to play with a striker like Smith. Owen, come to you. What sort of striker would you like to see us bring in the window? Is it just a like-for-like target man, or would you like to see other options come in as well? Like, would you like to see more than one striker come in?
Someone Scottish, proven at National League level. I think with Ironside, you're really going to struggle to replace him, because he's not the kind of player that is, Premier League academies aren't full of Joe Ironsides, are they? He's a very old-fashioned centre-forward. He's, he's the big lump, the big target man. And you've got to ask yourself, where are we going to be looking for this striker? You're either going to be looking within, League One, League Two, or maybe the Championship, for someone who's clearly not performing, otherwise no one's going to let him go in January. Or you're going to be looking at the academy system and picking up someone a bit like Shiloh Tracy, I suppose, who has maybe done a bit at League One or League Two level, but isn't really in the picture for a proper move somewhere, or isn't anywhere near the first team of his parent club. So that's what worries me, the fact that if we bring in someone young, we're going to have to really change the system. We're really going to have to mix it up. And then it's like, what's the point in doing it? Because the system's working well for us. The other thing that worries me is we end up with a kind of Joe Ironside clone from a Championship team or a Premier League team, and you end up with someone like, was it Joey McDonough from Forest, who we had a few years ago? Do you remember him?
Yeah.
Typical big man up front, but pretty crap, to be honest. I don't even know where he is now. I don't even know if he's still playing league football or what. But so yeah, it's a tough one for Bonner for sure. It's
rare that we're able to speculate about specific names. Owen says, where do you look to find players? Tom, do you look to the Scottish Prem? Do you look to Dundee and the lad that was a hero at Coventry that we're being heavily linked to?
Yeah, certainly fits the bill. I think that'd be Max Biamu. Who we've been linked to, I think, by one of the sort of Scottish papers. I think you've got to be realistic that we're not going to bring in somebody who scored like 25, 30 goals basically in their career. So we're going to be looking to somebody who can sort of perform a bit of like a function within the team. And it sounds like that's exactly what he does. His goal scoring record maybe it's not brilliant on the eye, but clearly, the value that he's brought to a team in the past at Coventry was enough to see them go through, through the divisions. And given that we're obviously on a bit of a promotion surge ourselves at the moment, that might be quite useful.
It took half an hour for someone on the pod to mention promotion. Love it.
Yeah. He got mentioned a lot of times last night, let me tell you that. I think there'll be probably speculation about different names coming in over the next few days. But yeah, certainly that sort of player, sort of big hold up target man, is basically exactly what we need. Sort of, if I'm looking aside from Biamu from Dundee, maybe a bit of sort of 2 + 2 = 5, but I see that Ipswich recalled the guy Simpson from Swindon, who actually impressed when he played at the Abbey. Right at the start of the season in the League Cup. I wonder if that's the sort of option that we might be interested in as well. So yeah, I'm sure there's plenty of different options that we're looking at. Biamu is obviously the one that we've been publicly linked with. So it suggests that there's some interest there, but we'll see. But it's definitely that sort of player that we need to be going for.
Because it is the January transfer window, let's keep talking about possible ins. Joe got in touch and asked, do we need to add more depth to the squad in the transfer window, or are we fine with what we have? So who wants to answer Joe's question, and what positions do you think we'll need to, that you would like to see us add to? And one more question, if we're talking about a big striker, do we maybe fancy like a smaller striker to play off him? Maybe Jermain Defoe at all?
Where's this come from?
Matt Casper asked me to get that one into the pod, so that's that one done. But let's go back to Joe's question about any other sort of areas that you would expect us to maybe pick up players in the remainder of this window.
I mean, yeah, we do need a bigger squad, don't we? I mean, that's pretty obvious. Look at our bench. There's not very much experience on it, but we're doing all right, aren't we? And when it comes to anyone you bring in January, is they're either going to be bombed out in January because they're not very good, or they're going to have a bit of a price tag attached to them because they're still under contract. So, do we need permanent signings this January? I don't know. I don't think so. I think maybe let's if we have to bring players in, bring these youth players through. There's a number of them that are doing well. We've got Kai Yearn, scored another screamer, didn't he, for the youth team against Leeds. We got the likes of Bennett. We got the likes of Simpa still out on loan as well. We've got decent players there. They just haven't got any real experience between them. And yeah,
Bonner says some really interesting things on Thursday ahead of the Crewe game on the subject that you just mentioned about the youth team players. He was just saying how difficult it is that the gap gets greater for them to sort of break into the squad. So we've gone very quickly from being a lowly average League Two team to sort of now being mid-table League One. So that gap from sort of youngsters being able to break into the squad becomes harder. He was also saying on Thursday about our transfer plans are sort of dependent on being loyal to our players that have done so well, that's done so well for us so far, you know, last season and this season. So I think our movements in the rest of the window will be influenced by how people are recovering from injury. So Jensen Weir, Liam O'Neill, Taylor and Jones at the back, Shiloh Tracy. So quite a lot of sort of gimmies there. I wonder, I suspect that next Monday's podcast will be full of maybe a couple of names that have been announced. Let's just return to the Crew game. Another Adam May long range strike. CUHD asks, is Adam May capable of scoring a normal goal? Russ has asked, have we had a player so synonymous with a type of goal as Adam May with his long ranges?
Yeah, really good for Adam May. It was a really strange goal, actually, certainly from watching it, you know, from the NRE. It looked like it got about 40 miles over the bar, and then all of a sudden it rockets off the underside of the bar and sort of into the roof of the net.
Cracking view from it in the South Habin, mate, just saying.
Yeah, I can imagine. It would have been even better if you got your usual spot, wouldn't it?
Oh, I know. Actually, no, my new spot, or my spot on Saturday, was a little bit further along, so maybe I got a better view, but who knows?
Funny old world, isn't it? I think I mean, firstly, just Adam May, because like he's obviously a player that I think it's fair to say it took us a little while to see this progress and see his real value to the team. I know, particularly the sort of start of last season, there was a lot of question marks, but he's come on so well. I mean, like a lot of the other players in the squad, you know, like the Mitovs, the Dunks, for example, to step up to this level and really kind of start excelling is quite impressive. And I think for the, you know, midfielders, the one thing that really, you know, evidences that progress is when they start adding goals to their game. Like we saw with Luke Berry, obviously, to a pretty mental extent when he was here, you know, started adding goals to his game. I think there was one season where he got 24 goals. I think that was the summer that he obviously ended up signing for Luton. But we're seeing a little bit with Adam May now. I think that's his fourth or fifth goal of the season. You know, sets him up nicely, you know, to, I guess, try and aim for like 8 or 10 goals a season, which is pretty good, really, for a centre mid. But yeah, like it was quite obvious at the start of this season that there had been a bit more emphasis on Adam May shooting. Didn't see too much of it last season, albeit he scored a few decent goals. I think there was one away at Morecambe in that 5-0 win right at the start of last season. He scored, obviously, the goal at Carlisle, which was a bit more of a sort of late arrival into the box and less of a long-range goal. But you could see it right away this season that when he was getting within that sort of 20, 25-yard area, he was basically taking a shot. And I think we're seeing that that's something he's really got in his locker, and it's such a useful asset to have. You know, set aside the fact that we've got strikers who are having, you know, record seasons with us, to have midfielders adding goals as well is really good. I think in terms of players who are synonymous with the type of goal, it's weird because I'm going to name someone who scored hardly any, but the only one that I could think of was Paul Carden, because it seemed like he was similar. Like every goal he scored was an absolute worldie.
Nice.
But I think he scored about 3 goals in about 5 years for us. So I don't know if that's really fair to kind of use to say that he's synonymous well with scoring goals.
Yeah, I was thinking about players that scored a lot from distance, and I had Liam Hughes and Wayne Hatswell in my head. But again, I think it's similar to the Carden one, where they maybe scored once or twice from distance. And so in my head, I think, oh, they're the you know, that was their thing. Owen, you came up with one.
Trevor Benjamin, just bearing down and terrifying goalkeepers in his first kind of couple of seasons, his first breakthrough season. I think he did it against Plymouth, I think it was possibly his first goal. I remember him just along the Habin side, just bearing down on, I'm going to say it was like John Vaughan or John Phelan in goal. It was certainly an old ex-United keeper, I'm pretty sure of that. And just terrified him. And then most famously did it to Kevin Pressman the season we went up as well. Again, he probably only did that twice. I mean, most of his other goals seemed to be pretty decent. But, you know.
And of course, Luke Berry stole it as well, right? Again, I think he only did it the twice, but both were against Notts County, I think.
With his arse. Oh, no, it was Ben Williamson with his arse, wasn't it? And Berry.
Yeah, was it Roy Carroll that smashed it against, like his backside or his back? And then
three goals, I think, in maybe 2 or 3 years, but were all from real goalkeeping howlers like that, weren't they? That was a fairly enjoyable period of time during those dark Sean Derry years.
One last question for this part of the pod, on the subject of Adam May. His contract is up in the summer. Do you think we'll be able to hang on to him? And on this topic, James has messaged in and basically said the same question, but for the rest of the squad, like, who do you think will be able to keep hold of this summer?
Yeah, I think, firstly, I think, you know, you definitely at least try and hang on to these guys. I think they're proven that they're in this system more than capable at this level. I think May falls into that group of players that we've got, like Mitov, who out of nowhere are probably going to have quite a lot of interest in them, I think. And that's obviously a bit of a concern, because then it, you know, obviously makes it more difficult to, you know, more difficult to keep hold of. And like I said just a moment ago, Adam May in particular started adding goals to the game for a midfielder. That's a really kind of, I guess, saleable asset. Well, I guess he's out of contract, so we're not going to get too much for him, but you know what I mean. I'd like to think that they would stay. I'd like to think that they've at least enjoyed their time with us enough, and hopefully, you know, we're able to offer them a good enough deal that we, you know, can sort of get it across the line. And I think if we were to offer them something, they probably would. But that's not to say that there won't be interest in them from elsewhere.
I can't imagine there's anyone in the squad at the moment that isn't going to be offered a contract. There's a couple of players you can speculate who might not get one, but from the way the club operates, I suspect everyone with us this season will be at least offered a contract, whether it's, you know, a long contract or the kind of contract they want, different matter altogether. But yeah, I'd like to think that they'll try and keep as much of a team together as possible, really.
As long as everyone ignores contract offers from Shelbourne, we'll be fine. Right, that will do for this part. We're going to look ahead now to another double game week. We play Rotherham in the Pizza Trophy, and then we play Fleetwood away on Saturday. And ahead of our trip to Fleetwood, we caught up with our good friend at the Cods Vlog. Okay, you youth fans, I'm joined again by Cods Vlog. Back by popular demand. Good to have you on us on the show again, mate. I guess my first question has been, how has life been for a Fleetwood fan since we last saw each other in September?
Yeah, it's been really tough, really. Again, we drew 2-2 that day. The defender who scored after his goal has gone to Bournemouth for over £1 million. Again, young player, England international, James Hill, and doing really well for himself. However, we've still got a lot of good players in our side. A lot have been injured. You know, our captain, Ross, had said we've had, you know, a lot of our strikers go injured. We've, you know, Morton and Edmonds that have been recalled. So it's been a real, real difficult stage with injuries. And again, we were playing some decent football. We were conceding a lot of goals. I know we conceded 2 against yourselves, 3 to, you know, Wigan after being 2-0 up. We conceded 3 away at Oxford. We were shipping 2+ goals every game. And that, unfortunately, lost the manager's job. I don't really like seeing managers lose the job in football, but I think that's part of the course. And since Stephen Crane has come in, we've been much better. 4 wins, 2 draws, 3 defeats. And the 3 defeats have been to, you know, fairly decent sides when you look at it, you know. Losing to Accrington, Shrewsbury, who were down there, but I think they're better than the table suggests. And Charlton, who must massively improved since Johnny Jackson came in.
So you mentioned new manager there. What sort of differences could Cambridge fans expect on Saturday when we play Fleetwood again under the new manager? Like, is there a different style of football, different formation, different personnel?
Yeah. Again, under Grayson, we were very rigid. And it was a 3-5-2. Mm-hmm. It was always a 3-5-2. And the tactics were always the same. Now, his tactics, Grayson, was probably very good tactics. However, we didn't have a plan B under Simon Grayson, I felt. And that's where we went wrong at Sunderland. That's where we went wrong at Blackpool. And we were easily found out towards the end. So Stephen Crane has just come in, played a back four. And he still had to use the youth players because that's what we've been relying on. You know, 18-year-old Kianese, 20-year-old Jay Mateta, who will play in the Premier League one day. I'm a big believer of that. You know, Shaden Morris, who's been, you know, excellent in flashes this season as well. He's just basically got them playing with a flair and a confidence. And again, we've gone to wingers. I do still think we need maybe one more winger and one more striker just to fatten that squad up. But in an embargo, I think we're allowed one more and we'd have to let go of another to bring a second in. So it's been a nightmare. But we're playing much better football on the floor, quicker, good transitions, balls into the box. And again, we're scoring goals and we are keeping it tight defensively. If I wouldn't, I hated losing 2-0 yesterday because I don't think that tells the whole reflection. But again, take the Accrington game out. I think we've only conceded maybe, you know, 4 or 5 goals, you know, in the other 7 or 8 games. So, you know, much, much better.
Excellent. And what sort of names of players should Cambridge fans keep an eye on for Saturday as sort of difference makers for Fleetwood?
I think Mateta, again, I think he's one of those where he's so strong on the ball, he's powerful. And I like players that run with the ball forward and play forward. Now, if you can do that as a midfielder, you will go to the top. It's simple, but it is effective. And you can win set pieces from it. And again, I think, you know, Adam May recently has been doing the same. He's been getting goals from midfield. And that's what you need to do. If you can do that, your team's going to be much, much better. So I'd probably say Mateta. Ellis Houghton's come in and done a decent job up front. Again, didn't really kind of get the support or the opportunities at Portsmouth, but the expectation down at Fleetwood is a bit more low-key than it is at Portsmouth. And also maybe Danny Andrew. Again, he scored 6 goals this year, 5 from free kicks. Just don't be giving silly set piece away from the edge of the box.
I have to ask you, mate, at the time of speaking, you're sat 20th. It is quite tight in that sort of, I don't know, bottom 8. Fortunately, Cambridge, we've got a little bit of a buffer as it stands, but that could quickly be overturned. But at the moment, you're sat 20th. How are you and the Fleetwood fan base feeling about the conclusion for the season and the prospect of relegation? Do you think you've got enough to be competitive and perhaps keep yourself head above the water?
Yeah, I agree. I thought we'd have a bounce, and that's what's happened. I think the bounce has been better than expected. And last week, beating Rotherham in the last minute, it was so unexpected. And you get a 4-point gap and you start to think, hang on a minute. We've got 4 points gap here. We can build on this. And then when you go and see Morecambe win, Lincoln win, Doncaster win, it brings you right back down. So last week, you're feeling on top of the world that you're never going down. This week, you're thinking, eek. Do you know what I mean? Ooh. And it's like, it's going to be one of those seasons where I think it's going to be 1 week we're going to feel like that and 1 week we feel like that. I think in the last 7 games, now I don't say anyone can beat anyone in League One. Fleetwood have to go to some big, big games. They've got Gillingham away coming up, who are down there. They've got Crewe away, who are fighting for their lives. Bolton, who are just a little bit above that drop. You know, I know they've won a couple recently. We've got to play, you know, yourselves are doing really well at the moment. Again, you win one, draw one, lose one. Cheltenham as well. So, again, there's a lot of opportunities, but we could equally go and lose them. And then we've got games down against Plymouth, Sunderland and Wigan and beat them. So I think we will stay up, but I think it'll go down to the last 2 games. If it goes down to the last day of the season, I think someone better check in with me. I think I might need a paramedic next to me.
Well, all the best for the survival fight, apart from Saturday, obviously. And just on Saturday, one last question, mate. How do you reckon the day is going to unfold? What sort of result do you reckon will happen? And just a reminder that when you asked me that question when you visited Cambridge, I did predict a 2-2 draw. So we've got history, you and I, of predicting the right result.
Oh, exactly. I think I better ask you then. I think it's going to be a tough game. I think you're very rigid in your approach. I think you're very good. I think you're very strong. I think you've had a very good season this year. I think it's going underestimated. Again, I think the good thing with Cambridge is I know they've got a few away games in hand. I know they played more home games. However, if you look at the points per game, the home and the away, there's no difference really at all. And that is the best thing you can have. So I think whoever scores first will win it. But I think, I know I've just said that and I'm going to concur with myself. But if you score first, I can see us maybe coming back. I'll sit on the fence. I'll go 1-1. But whoever scores first, I think, has got the mountain to go and really climb and go and win maybe 3-0.
Fantastic, mate. I'll take a point. Cheers for that. Brilliant. Thank you for that, Cods Vlog. Another double game week. But before Fleetwood away, we have a quarterfinal of the Pizza Trophy. Shane's been in touch and asked, how should we approach Rotherham away? He's called it in the JPT, the Johnson's Paint Trophy. I like that. I like calling it by funny older names. Should we play as strong a side as possible, or should we look to rest as many as possible with the league and FA Cup on the horizon? Tom Walker, what would your approach be to the squad on Tuesday? Or is it just a case of whoever's fit to play, plays?
Yeah, I think it'll be a bit of that, to be honest. You know what? This is actually a really strange game in terms of trying to decide how we should approach it. Because I feel like we're kind of too far in this tournament now to just kind of stick the kids out. And it's now a tournament which realistically we should be aiming to basically try and win. Obviously, Rotherham away, if we win that, I think you know, you're almost sort of booking your train tickets to Wembley, right?
There can't be many harder games left in this tournament. Like, who?
I think we're going to still in it, and that's probably about it. But we'll see. You know, we'll see how it goes. I think it's another good opportunity for Jack Lancaster to play. I think I'd like to see him get a start. And more than anything, I think it's a good opportunity for us to practice sort of playing without Joe Ironside. And look, I think if realistically, if we come away from this game and we lose like 3-0, I don't think too many people are going to lose too much sleep about it. So, like it has for, the last couple of years, I think it serves a real purpose. I think it's actually pretty beneficial in terms of the footballing side. I know there's plenty of people who are still not interested in the tournament whatsoever for, fairly obvious and well-spoken about reasons. But, I think it's a game where I think we probably are going to start actually trying to win them rather than just kind of giving experience to the younger guys. But we'll see.
Owen, Fleetwood away on Saturday. What's your sort of thoughts on that one? Would you be happy with a point, or do you think, given that we've beaten three teams below us in the last three league games, we should be looking to extend that run to four and another victory against the side in the relegation mixer and put some more distance between us and them?
I mean, a win would be perfect, wouldn't it? I think a win would, without wanting to be overconfident, probably keep us up, wouldn't it? Kind of take us out of that conversation and get us a lot closer towards the playoffs as well, which, maybe we need to be looking up, not down at the moment.
Stop it.
It's always tough, isn't it, going to these teams that are in a relegation fight. We've seen with Doncaster, we saw on Saturday. These teams, they're not just rolling over. You know, they're giving us a challenge and they're fighting. They're fighting for their lives. So I'm certainly not going there expecting 3 points, much like I didn't expect 3 points on Saturday, much like I didn't expect 3 points on Tuesday. To get 3 points would be really, really fantastic. Come on, let's be serious. Like we're not going to win every single game. You know, we're just not. But if we do beat Rotherham, that will be our sixth win in a row. We'll be unbeaten, I think, this year in 2022. We're not going to keep it up, are we? So if we do end up losing, it's not the end of the world. But a point would be a good takeaway from there. And three even better.
Absolutely. You mentioned there, Owen, about these teams that we've been playing around the bottom of the table. Both Donny and Crewe came into their games with us off the back of decent enough form considering their league position. And it's similar again with Fleetwood. They lost on Saturday to Charlton, but then they actually won the previous two, an away win at Doncaster and then a home win against a little team called Rotherham. So they're no mugs. How worried are you, Owen, about the striker situation going into that game?
I'm not massively concerned. I think Smith, I think he does a job. He was frustrating. He was frustrating on Saturday, but we know the guy's got goals in him. He's played well with Nibs before. If we do end up mixing it up totally and end up going with two up front, which I don't think he will, but if our hands are forced a little bit by injuries to do that, Smith and Nibs have played together. They did show a fairly decent understanding back in those pre-pandemic times. My thing is just go up there, wear amber shorts, get the points, come home.
Let's end, Tom, by talking about points. 6 points this week, 9 points from the last three league games, 5 wins on the bounce in all competitions, up to 12th in the league, 36 points, 9 points clear of Morecambe in 21st, and 14 points clear of the bottom three. Two questions for you, Tom. One from Adam says, is it too early to talk about promotion? And one from Jack, who asks, how many points to stay up?
I think if we average a point per game for the rest of the season, there's no chance that we're going to get relegated. That'd put us on, what, like 55 points? Mm-hmm. It's pretty inconceivable that we go down with that much. So I think that, broadly speaking, should be the aim. I would like to pick Owen up on something, though. He did say that he's not sure that we're going to win every game. Well, speaking specifically about Fleetwood, I think there's a pretty strong chance we're going to wear all amber. So,
as long as we do. As long as we do, points are guaranteed.
No, yeah, we'll see. I think just very briefly, just specifically on that Fleetwood game, I think it's another example of a game where if we win, like, it just kind of knocks them out of the picture a little bit in terms of catching us. So, yeah, I mean, a win there would be you know, truly perfect, and it takes a lot of pressure off those last few games, which is, I think, what we all want, basically. Is it too early to talk about promotion? I would... Do you know what? To answer that in a serious way, what I would say is that we're currently 10 points off the playoffs and 9 points off the relegation zone. People seem absolutely shit scared of the fact that we're going to get relegated. But, you know, find the briefest mention of the playoffs like absolutely inconceivable. So I'll just kind of leave that there and just say that if you think there's absolutely no chance we're going to get the playoffs, then... don't be too worried about relegation either.
One last question for you both. How bullish are you feeling about being in League One next year? And how excited are you that Peterborough are also going to be down here with us?
Yeah, can't wait. Can't wait to get 6 points, send them down again, back to where they belong.
A lovely way to end the pod. Owen, thank you very much, mate.
Cheers, mate. Thank you.
Tom Walker, thank you very much, mate.
Thanks so much, mate.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, because we release content every Monday, apart from the summer when we're on the beach. See you next week.